Hello and you're welcome to The Big Tech Show with me, Adrian Wackler, the tech editor of the Irish and Sunday Independent. And this week I'm talking to Dan Springer, the chief executive of DocuSign, who is trying to grow DocuSign's presence in Dublin in the middle of a pandemic and seems to be doing a fairly decent job of it. I also talked to Dan about what life was like as a single dad for a few years. He took a break between tech companies to raise two teenage boys, and also how the company has responded to the substantial problems that the economy is going to throw at it and at everyone. So this is how our conversation went. Dan Springer, Chief Executive of DocuSign, thanks a million for coming on the podcast today. Now, we're going to talk about the Irish office and lots that's going on with DocuSign, but obviously with the times we're in, I've got to ask you, this is a very odd time to be expanding an office, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The growth we've seen across Europe, and of course, Dublin is our European headquarters, has been phenomenal. So there's a lot of sort of long-term secular trend behind our growth and therefore our office expansion. But at this particular moment, you're spot on. It seems odd to people when they say we're continuing to grow aggressively in the region, but we're onboarding significant numbers of people remotely. So we're hiring new people. Onboarding them even though we don't have the office open.
Oh, okay. All right. And what's that like? I mean, what is it like to hire somebody when you've never seen them?
Well, we've seen them on video, I guess, for most of the cases, but it's true. We haven't met some of them in person.
Well, we all have a good video game. I mean, you know, I'm talking to you at the moment on Zoom, and I don't have a...
You're great on Zoom.
But does that translate into a job interview?
Well, so here's what we found. I mean, we're just at the beginning of this, Adrian, so it's early on. Mm. What had happened recently, we had people who we had been interviewing in the office, and then the crisis hit, and we decided our growth was so strong, we still needed to bring additional people on. So we finished the process, if you will, via video, and then we've done the onboarding. We're introducing them to their teammates and having their manager walk them through their responsibilities. All that has been done remotely. We're just in about probably 2 weeks away from the first set of folks who we never had a chance to actually meet in person, but we saw them, we had the video conferences, we did the interviews, and we're able to extend offers. So we'll see. I can't tell you exactly how that's worked yet. That's probably a few weeks away. I can tell you that if we continue to have the challenges with being remote, which I do expect we will, I'm not a prognosticator about what's happening with the world health situation, but it doesn't appear to me in the next several weeks we're going to see a relaxation of that.
No.
Ireland, of course, just got more aggressive, right, in the last week. So I do think we will end up hiring people in a few weeks' time who we have never met in person.
I mean, realistically, and this is not just a DocuSign question, this could be for any company. If you're hiring people, it's possible that the people you're hiring over video, you may not actually physically see for months.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. It's a brave new world. It's a brave new world indeed.
Because, for example, with my colleagues at work, I know them. I've been working with them for a few years. So even though I'm not seeing them every day, there still is a sense of, I suppose we have a sense of our work dynamic, because some of that is established with physical presence. I'm just fascinated how a new working relationship starts when, I suppose just the way that it evolves and it blossoms, it's probably just different.
Yeah, I don't know that it's better or worse. It's definitely different. I can tell you for the people who are trying to maintain our relationships, we are doing things like having virtual happy hours where a team will get together at 5 o'clock and say, let's not talk about work. Everyone grabs himself a beer or a beverage of choice.
And is that over Zoom?
And they get on Zoom. Oh, yeah, wow. They get on Zoom and they have a room, right? And they just chat like we're chatting. I did one yesterday with a team that was our East Coast sales team. They asked me to join them.
That's fun.
And it was great. And it was a good way. But you're right. That's people most of them I'd already met.
Yeah.
And already had some relationship with. So it's going to be different when we don't have that history.
I promise I will get more to the core business of DocuFind in one second. But I have that image in my head now there, 20, 30 people having a virtual drink session. Let's say some of them you don't know. Got to be all sorts of interesting kind of interpersonal things going on in the background in your head when you're seeing people like that. Like if you're single, for example, I mean, you know, at the best of times at the most neutral of times in an office, there might be kind of things going on there, but it's going to be a whole different thing. Leading you down a conversation of dating, but let's talk a little bit about DocuSign itself. So the e-signature, I've been using electronic signatures for a while. I don't always use DocuSign though, because I'm a casual user. So I will dip in and out, and there are a lot of services out there that will give you, that will let you have a quick hit for free if you're only doing it, you know, once a month, once every 2 months. Mm-hmm. But you say that half of the transactions on the platform with e-signatures are completed in less than 15 minutes, at 80% in one day, compared to paper-based signatures, which sometimes can have a turnaround of 9 days.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's some saving.
Yeah, it's a powerful time savings for sure. And we see that both with big companies, mm-hmm. as well as you said, individuals and some small businesses. And remember, what's interesting about DocuSign, the largest corporations in the world use us, but also small businesses, mom and pops use us. And so we see that time savings working for both small companies and big companies. Mm. And one of the great parts about it, as you said, for users, for folks that we maybe don't have a business relationship with where they're paying us, but they're just leveraging the technology to sign agreements in the Corey signature business. For those folks, they have an amazing efficiency where they used to have to go into an office or meet someone or have what's called signing ceremonies. As you said, it's a wonderful improvement in the consumer experience to just be able to sign. We say DocuSign and go. Mm.
I mean, it's always been a wonder to me how many companies will ask you still to this day, and I'm a journalist, so I will often have to sign things like NDAs for advanced review products, and the more savvy companies will either make it easy for you with a digital signature, or some of them will even just say, look, if you return this email and say that you agree to the terms, we'll accept that. But so many of them will ask you to print out the document, wet ink sign it, and scan it back in as a PDF. It's infuriating.
Yep. I still get that once in a while. And of course, I always tell people, you know, there's a product that does just what you described. It's called DocuSign. And then I'll tell them we can do it. But it gets to the point about the growth in this market. And, you know, we're by far the largest player in the space. We're 6 or 7 times the business EchoSign that Adobe bought. Mm. And even though we're 6 or 7 times their size and by far the largest player in the space, we think this is very early days in this business because there are still lots of people doing what you described that haven't yet sort of moved forward to the electronic signature place. And it's the same thing, not just in signature, but the overall DocuSign agreement cloud, right? All the things we're doing to go beyond e-signature to help people prepare agreements, sign them, act on them, and then manage all those agreements. That is also very early stage. So we're excited from a standpoint. It's a big growth opportunity.
Yeah, and I'm going to ask you a little bit in a minute about a company that you acquired that called Seal, which will help you to do that. But in the current climate, you might imagine that with more people working from home and more remote working, that this would disproportionately help companies like DocuSign. But I've seen you say that you don't necessarily think that that's the case, or you haven't seen a particular surge.
Well, let me tell you what we've seen. First off, you know, anytime we get into this topic, of course, we feel compelled to mention that, you know, this is a tragedy, right? This pandemic is something that there's no good coming out of this pandemic. Mm. And most of our focus is around trying to make sure our employees are safe, customers are well taken care of, as you would expect. But when it comes to our business, I think there's sort of two impacts that we foresee. One is, I think there will be a negative economic cycle for sure, and that will affect all companies, including DocuSign. And if a CFO or a CIO says, we're going to stop all projects or stop all, they'll even stop a DocuSign project that usually has an incredibly high return on investment because they just sort of, you know, shoot first, ask questions later. So we expect that there will be some impact for us. We also believe that some businesses might not survive. So there might be some of our customers that they're so focused on something that's impacted by this, like the hospitality and travel as an example. Some of them might not be able to survive. So those are the clear negatives we foresee. On the flip side, you're absolutely right. People have talked a lot about this idea that as more people work from home, as more people want to do remote transactions, as more companies just say, I want to drive the digital transformation that makes sense anyway, will it get accelerated because of, you know, the coronavirus? And I think the answer is yes. We do see that. We do see people coming to us, governments, banks, healthcare, life sciences companies, saying we need to go faster with DocuSign. And so at this point, yeah, we see there's some benefits that are coming to our business from that as well. At this point, we've sort of come to the rough conclusion that they're probably about equal, Adrian. And so our kind of view is that our business will be about the same as it would have been. And that's kind of where we are today. But it's kind of so early in the process. That's what we're seeing so far.
And yet this will pass. This pandemic will pass. I mean, whether it's 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, whatever the time period will be. But surely this time for companies and businesses in reassessing how they do things, that's only going to help a company like yours. I mean, we're talking on Zoom at the moment. Now, Zoom is one of the breakout apps and services of this zeitgeist, of this era. There are people who are using Zoom, who are doing yoga classes over Zoom. My wife is doing a book club this Friday yeah. night over Zoom. And she wouldn't have known what Zoom was a couple of weeks ago. I would have barely used it myself. And so DocuSign, maybe in this space where when this passes, this acceleration of digital processes, I mean, that's got to help you, surely, when this is over.
I think that's absolutely right. In fact, I was having a dinner a couple weeks ago, just at the very beginning of this, before we were social distancing, with Eric. Eric Wan is the CEO of Zoom. And he was saying, boy, people keep talking to me about your business. And I said, yep, people keep talking to me. And we're both customers of each other's business and partners. He's a great guy. And we believe, you're right, that the digital transformation that's happening, that's getting accelerated by something like this horrible pandemic, will have a lasting impact. Once people see how things are so effective, they're not going to flip back. They're going to say, this is just a better way to do business. And I'll give you one other quick example. We have a big customer event every year, and we bring together people. First, we do it in the U.S. in San Francisco, and then we bring it to other cities. And we plan to be in Europe, depending on what happens in the pandemic, in June. And with the San Francisco event was in March, and we had to turn it into a virtual event. And initially, we thought, this is going to be terrible, the value of having all the customers together, in one place. What we found is 5 times as many people came when we made it virtual because they didn't have to do the travel. And we found that the event was very strong in terms of generating interest and leads for people wanting to do it more with DocuSign. So we've actually started to rethink the whole concept of our conferences by being forced into this place. I think other businesses are going to see the same things with DocuSign and go, wow, what more can I do and how can that accelerate the business?
I mean, that's a really interesting point about conferencing, because my understanding about many of the big conferences that happen, and I go to a few of them during the year, is that a lot of executives tell me that, the keynotes are fine, but what they're actually there really is for the meetings, the side meetings that they have. Sometimes they barely even set foot in the conference center itself. They'll just have meetings lined up around the event. But the sense I always get is that a lot of that is based on physical presence. But you're saying that the feedback that you got was that a lot of that was able to be done virtually?
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head when you separate the two pieces. The piece that I think worked really well for the conference was our ability to show our customers our technology and our products, and that was very positively received. But you are spot on about something that's missing. And I'll give you just an example. Last year, I went to the World Economic Forum because we announced DocuSign for Forests with Jane Goodall. And walking around, seeing so many of my customers, I had, because all the CEOs of the top banks and insurance companies, many of them go to Davos for the World Economic Forum. And I ended up having a bunch of meetings that might only be 10 minutes or 15 minutes, but that was a meeting that now obviated the need for me to go to New York or go to London to see, some of those executives. So I found it to be very efficient. And I think that those things are hard to capture, in a virtual place. You could have phone calls with those individuals, of course, but the efficiency of seeing so many people so quickly, that's very valuable. Like you said, when we were talking about hiring people, there is a value with in-person interactions that are different than virtual ones. So I don't think it means there won't be any conferences. I just think we're going to rethink how we do our various events and what we try to accomplish virtually and what we try to accomplish in person.
That's interesting. That's very interesting. DocuSign itself, now you just announced figures. You had a very good quarter there in the last year. You're looking at an annual run rate now of over $1 billion. Very relatively few software as a service companies get to that level. I think you've got almost 600,000 customers now, and you're looking at profitability toward the end of the year. Just to come back again to the current era, an awful lot of software as a service companies are tempted to offer free or discounted offerings, services, as a kind of a solidarity thing. Some do, lots don't. I'm just wondering, from from your point of view, not DocuSign particularly, but from the position that you're in that kind of a company, is there a risk to doing that? Or I mean, because I sometimes, like, we were asked, for example, as journalists, we have a paywall up on our site for about half of our stories, and a lot of people came at me and said, well, would you not lift the paywall during this particular crisis? To which my response was, look, all of the public service stuff, that you really need to know in terms of urgent information on where to go, what to do, all that's actually free. It's not in the paywall. But if you ask to lift the paywall for the other stuff, the analysis and the columns, that's not there as a luxury. That's kind of bread and butter that keeps the thing from folding, you know, keeps the thing alive. And I wonder,
your core business model. Yeah.
Right. So I'm wondering, is it the same for, you know, for a software company? Is it that, because like right now, I mean, are you guys getting those kind of requests? Oh, could you not sort of, you know, discount something, or could you not waive fees for this or for that? Or is that even a thing?
No, it is a thing. And it's, I think actually our industries in this way are kind of similar, because your business has something similar to ours. It's a high gross margin and an incremental basis, you know, that one more person, of course, it's highly profitable for your business, because information business, same as ours, is a software business. But here's what we've sort of done, and here's what we've seen. Traditionally, software companies, and so will media companies, might offer people a 30-day trial to say, if you want to try our product and see what it's like, we're excited to do that, so you have an opportunity to see the value. And we do that from time to time as well, particularly for small businesses. But in this situation, we also realized there were a lot of people who were in businesses that needed to get online because they had now people remote. And we wanted to make it easy and frictionless. And so, for instance, realtors, we have some partnership with the National Association of Realtors in the U.S. And they came to us and said, hey, this industry's struggling a little bit. Could you create a program for people where they'd have a lower cost way or a free trial way? We created some 90-day trials for people. We've also done that with government agencies that are really trying to, you know, serve the populace. And we've done that as well, and giving them free 90-day trials. But the way we look at that is, one, we want to support people, you know, in a time of struggle, particularly while this crisis is happening. But I'll also be clear, we look at it and say, it's good for us, for the world to see what DocuSign can do. And then they'll tell two friends, and they'll tell two friends. And some of those people will say, post this period, they'll say, we actually would like to use DocuSign. Mm. So I also think there's a benefit to getting, just like if you have an opportunity to potentially consider giving people free access to some of your premium content, some of them over time are going to say, hey, Adrian, you write pretty well. I'd like to read your articles all the time. And there may be a long-term business in that. So that's sort of how we're thinking at this point, is we want to focus on supporting customers and agencies and governments that have a need right now where we can be helpful to the solution. Mm. If it has a positive, you know, business building thing in the future, that's great too, but let's focus on supporting the people that are asking for our help.
Now, I mentioned Seesoft,
yes.
Software a while ago, and I'm kind of fascinated by this idea. So this is a company that you acquired, I think it was only about a month ago, and essentially that puts you into a different space in terms of what DocuSign can do with the agreement process. I mean, you can automate a massive amount of it. And correct me if I'm wrong here, but what I picked up from that was that you could integrate all of a firm's, or an awful lot of a firm's, of a company's agreements and contracts. You might have a letter which involves one particular department, for example, that could be integrated with human resources. Where are we headed, like, in that sense? What will you be able to do?
Yeah, I think there's two big things that are exciting about Seal, and in general about sort of artificial intelligence. And, you know, sometimes I'm always sensitive that in Silicon Valley particularly, but you see the same thing in the centers around the world, and you see it, Dublin's become, you know, a tech center, of course, that people use terms like machine learning and artificial intelligence in not very thoughtful ways, just because they're kind of buzzwords. But what we see about Seal and sort of advanced analytics for agreements and artificial intelligence is two big things. One is, there's just product uses where people say things like, I need to look across all of my agreements to find something. We call it intelligent search. Mm-hmm. I need to find all the agreements I've done that maybe are linked to the price of oil. Or because I need to understand what my risk is. Price of oil has come way down, as we all know. So what does that mean? What agreements do I have that might be connected to that? Let's say I'm a chemicals company. I probably have lots of agreement. Now, how do I go find them all in an efficient way versus having a bunch of attorneys run around searching all my agreements? That's just a great example where the computer, that artificial intelligence, can find things like that. And it might be they don't look under just the word price of oil, but maybe they say energy prices, or there's some other term that's used, and the artificial intelligence can sort of seek that out for you. That's a great example. The second big area for us is all of the agreement processes that we do with the DocuSign Agreement Cloud, they can get better and smarter and more intelligent. And a specific example that we just actually showcased at that virtual conference I was describing, because it had to be virtual, was this idea of when people use a signature on a form, someone uploads a form, they have to tag it, right? They have to say, I want the name to go here for the person like you that's going to sign it, the date to go here. We realized we've processed so many agreements, we probably could guess just by looking at an agreement what each of those terms are. And so now we do an auto tag. So you have this wonderful experience as a user of DocuSign where you upload an agreement that could have hundreds of places for information, and it automatically tags what type of information goes in each one. And then you can review it and make sure it's all correct. But starting off, it's all done for you. So that's just an example. We're making our core e-signature business better with artificial intelligence. And that's how we like to think about it. Not the technology for technology's sake, but how can it bring more value to our users?
Well, not just technology for technology's sake, but also there's going to be a lot of lawyers and middle managers, Dilbert-style people who are not going to be happy about that. It never ceases to amaze me how much form filling some parts of some businesses have. I remember when I was buying, first time when we bought our home, it was an apartment. It was in an apartment block, and there were, I think, 72 apartments, and it was the exact same title for the land, for everything legally. And yet it was the same solicitor, same lawyer who dealt with probably half of the apartment sales, but the lawyer still managed to charge the full fee for individual original title deed searches, you know.
Yep, same search, yep.
Anyway.
And that's something we hope to automate. And to your point, some people might look at that and say, wow, that's my current livelihood, or that's my approach. Mm-hmm. We hope with the technology we can get people to say there's higher value uses for their education and their training and their skills. Let's automate this piece that doesn't need to use a highly skilled individual and free them up, you know, for the more strategic and interesting. But there are transformations, as you said, we go through where there's resistance and people get used to doing things a certain way. We hope we can make that better.
Now, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to finish up in a minute by asking you about the Irish office and how are you getting on here. But I also want to ask you just about yourself. One thing I didn't know about you that when I was researching, you took some time out to be a stay-at-home dad for a couple of years to your two sons.
Yeah, that's true. My last company is a company called Responsys. It was a public software company, and we sold it to Oracle. And I had two boys, one in middle school, one in high school. And I realized it was just a great last opportunity before they went off to university to spend some great time together, to make it to every soccer match and just sort of be there for dinner every night. So I ended up, I did some work. I didn't completely do it. I joined some boards. And I did a little, but I was a 9-to-5-er, and I was, you know, breakfast every morning with my kids, dinner every night. It was the best 3 years I think I really had in my life. It was awesome. I would highly recommend if anyone ever gets that opportunity. And the last thing I'd say about it is it totally made me, when I came back to work at DocuSign, I think it made me a better CEO, because it made me appreciate some of the balance things that other people have to deal with and struggle. And, you know, I grew up with a single mom, and it's a different situation a lot of people have. It's one of the reasons at DocuSign we put in place something that might be more common in Europe, but not in the U.S., which is a 6-month leave policy for everyone when they have a child, adopt a child, or have a baby. And those are kinds of things that I wouldn't have been as sensitive to before. So it was a fantastic experience to have.
I mean, it's amazing. Sometimes I think in our culture, and Ireland wouldn't be that far away from the U.S., from the cultural response. Yes, we do have good supports, generally speaking. I think slightly better in Europe than in the U.S. But culturally, when you hear of a man taking time off to spend time with his kids, it's still quite unusual. I mean, it's still quite an unusual thing. How did you find that? I mean, was there an interesting vibe professionally, or was there any interesting response to that?
Well, two quick thoughts for you. One is, look, I was very fortunate, and the timing was I just had sort of achieved a very high professional achievement, and I got a very high valuation. We sold our company, and everyone was telling me, Dan, you did a 10-year run at this company. You turned it around. So I felt pretty self-assured about that. I didn't have sort of an ego issue at that point where I was in my career. But I will tell you, the vast majority of people I talk to have the same, even in the United States, have the same reaction you had, is like, ooh, are you okay? Or why is a man doing that? And yeah. I'll tell you, I don't think I'm quite able to say I'm a feminist, but I'll tell you this, I became more of a feminist going through this experience of saying, why do people expect a woman to make that a priority and not expect a man? It's just a mistake. It's a mistake we have culturally. And I really, since you've got listeners out there, I hope they all think about it and say, yeah, it's really no different. Why wouldn't a man want to spend time with his kids? And why should we think that a woman should do it and not a man? I think in the next generation, our young people, Adrian, they're going to be better and smarter than we are about this. And they're going to have a more evolved sense that says men or women are both parents and we should look at it the same way. But I admit, to be really clear about it, 20 years earlier in my life when the kids were born, I probably wasn't at a place where I would have had the confidence to have people look at me and say, wow, you're stepping off the career. Do you feel like a failure? It would have been hard for me. But I think we need to be realized it's the same thing for women. And so we have to be careful not to do that to women just because they haven't had that historical position.
One of my best friends did the same thing, slightly different circumstances, didn't sell a highly successful company to Oracle, but had a, kind of a career break, but ended up being the main carer and the main parent for their son, their young son, while his wife went out to work. And it led to kind of just very interesting things. Like, for example, he would do the school run in the morning and the school parents, mostly mums, would become friendly. And once or twice a year, they would have like a dinner out together. So he would end up going out with like 11 women to a restaurant. I think he would share your sense of newfound appreciation for some of the challenges.
Yeah, I got competitive with some of the other moms, because to your point, when they're doing school things, most still in our society of the other parents involved, there were the mothers. And I got competitive about saying, I can be just as good as the mother. So I found myself on the other side where they and most of the time, I wasn't as good, to be honest, because I hadn't had those years of experience that they had. In terms of the ones that weren't working, outside of the home. And I wasn't as good of a mom, but I tried really hard to catch up. I'm not sure I ever made it. I'm pretty sure I didn't. But I was a little bit competitive about trying to say I could be as good of a mom as the moms. And
it's funny. Yeah.
It's funny. We're all on different sides of different challenges.
Yeah, yeah. To the Irish office then, DocuSign, are expected to hire about 100 people here in the next year.
I think it'll be a little more than that. I think it'll be actually a little more than that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that puts the company in quite a strong growth position here in Dublin. I mean, I have to ask you, how are you finding business in Dublin? Why are you expanding here?
So a couple things. One is, I mean, by the way, we're not alone. I mean, the tech base globally has really realized that Dublin is the optimal spot in Europe for a European headquarters. It used to be London was a place. Amsterdam had some, not as much on the tech space. But Dublin is really where most of the tech leaders are now going. And that's why the business has just become a boomtown in the tech space. And the primary reasons we see it is it's incredible access to talent. And you see the phenomenon that the youth in Europe are coming to Dublin. And so you can hire people that are culturally and language proficient in French, in German, in Spanish, Italian. And so we can build an entire European, sort of operation that really is pan-European in Dublin. And so there's a lot of efficiency and effectiveness to having them all together. So that's the reason that we're making, Dublin our focus. And over time, in addition to sort of sales resources and marketing resources, we're seeing increasingly technical resources, engineering jobs. We want to bring the whole focus. And so the same way we have in San Francisco and Seattle are kind of our co-headquarters in the U.S., we think Dublin will be the big growth area and headquarters for us across Europe.
I mean, one of the interesting elements of that is locally. I mean, the reception and, you know, chatter and discussion is always different local to internationally. And locally here in Dublin and in Ireland, there's often a narrative that big companies come here for tax reasons. Now, I've put that to many other CEOs over the years, and some of them, it's, you know, when you're dealing with a Tim Cook figure or someone else like that, that's a harder one for them to rebut, because the multi-billion dollars, and they do achieve significant tax efficiencies through through the way they organize their finances abroad. But there are other companies like DocuSign that I've spoken to who haven't even yet turned a profit. So the idea that they were coming to cut their tax bill wasn't really a thing, because they weren't actually making a profit yet.
So you're spot on. I'll just give you one example. Actually, last year we were looking at moving. The way people fundamentally do what you're describing is what's called move their IP. So if you transfer the intellectual property, which we're, as a software company, we derive our profitability. If you transfer that to your entity in Dublin, then you can say those profits that come from that are, you know, domiciled there, and then you have a lower tax rate than you would in another European, you know, entity for sure. But in our situation, we actually looked at it last year. And at our size and our scale and our profitability, it wasn't worth the accounting cost to move the IP to Dublin, or to Ireland, I should say. And so we didn't. Some year in the future, it may get there. But you are spot on when you say, I don't care if there was zero change in any tax implications. We want to serve our customers, and we want to build the best workforce we can build in Europe. And we believe the best way to do that is to focus on Dublin, and whatever might happen in the future on the tax side, we're going to be in Dublin.
It's a really interesting perspective. Dan, thanks a million for coming on the podcast today.
To connect.
The very best of luck in the future.
Cheers.
And that was Dan Springer, the chief executive of DocuSign, talking to me a little bit earlier. That's all we have time for, folks, today. Please do stay tuned for our podcasts. We're with you every week. We're not taking a break during this whole pandemic. For me, Adrian Weckler, the tech editor of the Irish and Sunday Independent, bye-bye for now.